Friday? It's June?
Oh my
God. What's even happening? Hey, it's Christy and Alonzo. So much stuff happening. So much stuff coming up. It's a crazy time. But plenty to cover today, particularly Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, as well as the A24 drama Past Lives. And big week for television. We are getting all in on the Ted Lasso finale over at our Patreon, where we hope you'll have already joined us, or if not, now's a great time to do it. In the meantime, Christy's got news.
Hello, so much news. If you missed our Succession wrap-up, that is out there for your enjoyment. Still thinking about it all these days later. I don't know what to do with my life anymore without those crazy Roy kids to keep me occupied. But Dr. Romney and I had a fantastic conversation, a very lengthy, in-depth spoiler talk about the Succession finale. So that is out there on our YouTube channel. Please go and find that and let us know what you thought. But more pressing breaking news. Our long national nightmare is over. Dwayne Johnson confirms he will indeed return to the Fast franchise, which we knew if you saw Fast X.
Yeah,
we
unless
knew.
You didn't stay for the credits. Like, this is new, not news, right?
But also, like, it totally reinforces my theory that this is all theater and wrestling and BS, because he posted a video on his Twitter feed, like this 4-minute long rambling video talking about how, you know, Vin and I may not have gotten along in the past. One thing we can agree on is audience first, fans first. And so Hobbs is coming back.
Again, would this be happening if Black Adam had been a hit? Right? I don't know.
I don't know. But apparently this is a bridge between Fast X and Fast X Part 2 and or Fast 10, whatever the hell Universal wants us to call it these days. So, yeah, exciting. Are you excited for the return of Dwayne Johnson to the Fastiverse?
I mean, you know, yeah, sure. Why not? I think he definitely brought a lot to his early appearances. And at this point, it's just kind of like you do want to keep the band together. I was reading, I didn't care enough to click on it, but I did see headlines about how apparently this is sort of that Fast X is kind of underperforming at the box office. I don't know if that's a thing or if it was just clickbait, but you know, that's out there in the world. And of course, you know, with, you know, Spider-Man having a really strong opening this weekend, you know, there's a lot of like, oh, what's this going to mean for the Little Mermaid? So, you know, we seem to be back in kind of pre-pandemic, like jockeying when it comes to movies. Although it would be nice if we were at a place where, you know, oh, people could see, like, more than one movie could make all the money in one weekend. We'll see what happens.
Right. In a couple of weeks, on June 16th, we have Elemental, The Flash, and Asteroid City opening all on the same day. And I can imagine that there's a lot of overlap, at least for Elemental and The Flash, as far as audiences go. So
yeah. And Transformers in the meantime. So, you know, it is as summer as it gets.
Yeah. And then looking down the road a bit, July 21st, Oppenheimer is coming out. And our friend Lindsay Barr at the AP had a big exclusive story with Christopher Nolan explaining a whole lot about what he thinks is the best way to see it. First of all, this is going to be rated R. It's Nolan's first R-rated movie since Insomnia in 2002.
Shockingly, so is Barbie. No, I'm kidding.
I mean, but it could be, right?
It is Greta Gerwig and Noah Baumbach. Unfettered, who knows what we'd have wound up with.
Right. So we have this whole long talk, and I love this kind of nerdy stuff so much, like the technical stuff. He's talking about how, you know, the best way to see it is in IMAX 70mm. So he shot it in 65. It's being projected in 70. There's only like a couple dozen theaters in North America that have the capability of even showing it that way. He talked about his favorite place to see a movie where he likes to sit in the theater. And apparently the IMAX prints for Oppenheimer, which is nearly 3 hours long.
Yeah.
The prints are, I want to get this right, 11 miles long and they weigh like 600 pounds. From a storage perspective, where do you put 11 miles of film stock?
Alamogordo, New Mexico? I don't know.
I find this very confusing. So, like, I want to know from, like, theater managers, like, how are you going to deal with the behemoth that is Oppenheimer coming your way?
FedEx and UPS are like, yes.
Somebody needs to sign for this. So does this make you more or less excited about Oppenheimer when you hear these kinds of numbers?
I mean, I none of this surprises me. You know, in the coming weeks, we're going to start seeing on Twitter, like, the letters to projectionists. You know how Nolan is. He's going to, like, have these very detailed, well, this is where the light setting should be at the blah, 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 and make sure the masking is blah, blah, blah. And, like, great. More power to him. Like, yeah. I think I appreciate that level of hands-on, you know, OCD when it comes to film projection. I wish there were more of it in projection, theater projection in general. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I'm not surprised. Of course, a 70-millimeter, three-hour movie is going to be gigantic. But, I mean, that used to be, you know, the trade of the land, you know, like when you think back at like the 50s and 60s, you know, in that sort of post TV era where suddenly like everything's in CinemaScope and everything's 3 hours, everything has an intermission. And like now it's a super 70, blah, you know, that, you know, Cinerama. I mean, think about a Cinerama print, because that's three projectors, you know? So yeah, this is just, this is how we used to do things before, you know, movies fit on like a little thumb drive that got sent out to theaters.
Yeah, I think it's cool too. So I can't wait to see it. We'll have to figure out the best way to go and see it. So Tom Holland says that there had been some meetings going on about Spider-Man 4 that are now not happening because of the writer's strike. I kind of feel like everything wrapped up really nicely in that last Tom Holland Spider-Man, but...
Yeah, but I think also in a way that, I mean, nothing ever ends, obviously, with these movies. No. But I think it also sort of provided a springboard to like, well, now what kind of stories do we tell in this world where nobody knows who he is?
Yeah.
And you know, all that stuff. So
how does he win Ned and MJ back, right? How does he rekindle that friendship?
Or does he resign himself to like not wanting to open that Pandora's box again, because that's what prompted all the problems in the last movie, you know? Yeah. So, I think they could go on with it. But as always, if they want to stop, please stop. You know?
Yeah. You know who said stop but is coming back is Kim Cattrall.
You know what? It's funny that you mentioned this in the same one with Dwayne Johnson coming back to Fast X. Because in both cases, I bet you they will never see anybody else. Nope. She's going to be on a phone call. Yeah. He's going to be on a green screen. Yep. And it's going to be like, look, I'm in the movie, you guys. But that was it, you know.
Hashtag family. Yeah. So Kim Cattrall, like, famously was very critical of Sarah Jessica Parker and everyone involved with the Sex and the City sequel. She's like, hell no, I will not do a third one. And then when this HBO series and Just Like That came out, like, she's not part of it. I guess I've never seen it, but I guess there's some allusion at the end of the first season of like a text message. The second season begins June 22nd, I want to say. And she's in the season 2 finale. Like one scene, as you say, she's on a phone. She's on a phone and Carrie's on a phone, but they never have to be in the same room, much less the same continent with each other.
Exactly. Yeah. They basically did she's not dead. She's just living in London and had a bit of a falling out with Carrie, but they still text back and forth a bit. And she finally texts back at the end of the season. So they were clearly like trying to leave that door open and they didn't want to burn that bridge, if I'm going to mix my metaphors. And obviously it paid off because they did get her to consent to, like, you know, I'm reminded of, do you remember, were you old enough for Three's Company? Were you alive?
Yes.
Okay. Remember when Suzanne Summers was having like some sort of contract dispute and there was a whole set of episodes where she literally was on in the last 5 minutes of the episode on the phone talking to them from somewhere else? That's what this is.
That is this. But Patricia Fields is going to dress her anyway.
Of course.
For that one scene.
Hells yeah.
Yeah. I would demand it. Of course.
Please.
So
and demand to keep the outfit too.
For sure. Kenneth Anger, someone we did not talk about before.
Yes.
And someone I know you want to talk about. Let's discuss him.
Sure. So, I mean, you know, there really kind of wasn't queer cinema per se until he came around. Some of the earliest examples of what we can call a kind of queer experimental cinema, certainly. Obviously, queer images and movies go all the way back to the silent era. But his 1947 film Fireworks was a huge kind of breakthrough movie in terms of unabashedly queer images with kind of, you know, his interest in the occult and classical art. He was 20 years old when he made it, like in his parents' home in Southern California, and, you know, and at least one public restroom. and it, you know, it became this hugely influential film. Like Genet was a big fan of it, and Cocteau, and, you know, like he really kind of put him on the map. And, you know, he made these really extraordinarily, like, gorgeous, homoerotic, transgressive films, you know, Inauguration of the Pleasure Dome and Scorpio Rising, which is a huge influence on Scorsese. Like, the Scorsese needle drops owe so much to how Scorpio Rising used pop songs. You know, of course, he wrote the two Hollywood Babylon books, which are these like super dishy and not entirely true gossip books about Hollywood's, you know, like the stuff you didn't hear about, the scandalous murders and sex things, you know, which, again, as my father used to say, si non è vero è buon trovato. Like they're fascinating reads, even if they're complete nonsense. And yeah, he was just always this very sort of a controversial figure, like always very outspoken, posted his own death notice in the Village Voice in 1967. Just, you know, like, and so, yeah, he is super important to queer cinema, to underground cinema, to avant-garde cinema, just a major American artist. And he passed away last week at the age of 96.
Yeah. He died, I think, like way earlier in May. And like, it just wasn't reported for a little while.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
So we just learned about it like last week. Yeah. In a nursing home in Yucca Valley at 96. Right. And then I want to mention that Eddie Izzard now says that she wants to be called Susie.
All right.
All right. So she is Susie and she wants to use she, her pronouns. Okay. She posted something on Twitter saying, you know, call me Susie, but I'll also answer to Eddie. So it's kind of a fluid thing. Not surprising at all if you know Eddie Izzard / Susie's whole raison d'etre, whole stage persona. Right.
Welcome to the world, Susie Izzard.
We have gone into the Spider-Verse, and now we are going all the way across the Spider-Verse with Miles Morales. The latest in the saga is here. It's an extravaganza. I kind of want to do a spoiler talk at some point because there's so much to talk about. But for now, we have a spoiler-free review for you of Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. If you've not subscribed, really now is the time. We are thick in the middle of all the big summer movies, all the blockbusters, all the cool little art house movies that you don't hear about really anywhere else. So we'd love to have you join us here in our little community. Hit subscribe and hang out with us. Alonzo, what is Across the Spider-Verse about?
So we begin with Spider-Gwen, voiced by Hailee Steinfeld, and she and Miles Morales, voiced by Shemaik Moore, really miss each other. They really felt like they finally met somebody who understands what they're going through. Both of them are dealing with not feeling comfortable telling their parents who they really are, the truth about their spider-ishness. happy Pride, everybody. Then one day when Gwen is chasing the vulture, she's like, wait, this isn't my vulture. Who is this guy? And then Spider-Man 2099 and Spider-Woman show up. And it turns out, oops, in the previous movie, when they shut down the Kingpin's collider, didn't entirely seal up all of the holes in the multiverse. And so people are still kind of gooping out from dimension to dimension. It's very complicated. And it all has to do with Miles. And so he gets called back into the fray along with an infinite number of spider men, women, cars,
cats, dinosaurs,
yes, horses from across the multiverse. And this is the second entry in a trilogy, and so it's kind of the Return of the Jedi of the Spider-Verse
movies.
No,
it's The Empire Strikes Back.
Sorry, yes, forgive me.
Sorry, nerds.
Please, don't at me. It is The Empire Strikes Back of the Spider-Verse trilogy, which means we are left with a cliffhanger. And between now and then, but by the time you get to that cliffhanger, you will have been visually and audibly barraged with all of the crazy stuff that these movies deliver, the multitude of animation styles, the edits, the exciting action, the Lord and Miller of it all. And so I loved it. To me, this felt like not just a great follow-up to the previous Spider-Verse movie, but coming now off of the high of Everything Everywhere All at Once and RRR, this just felt like, yes, more, you know, and I had a great time with it.
I did too. I was totally dazzled and I love the first one so much. And I kept hearing folks saying like, this one's better. I was like, how? Like, how could you top that? That was so invigorating and so original and just such a total blast. But they really have in every way. And yes, it is more and it is longer. But I feel like it earns that running time.
Sure.
Because it does give all these different scenarios room to breathe. Mm-hmm. It's hilarious. I laugh my ass off early and often. But there's also more emotional heft here than you have in the first, and certainly more than I would have expected. I got teary-eyed. There's a scene with Miles and his mom, which is so true. Like in the middle of all of the excitement and him being tugged in various directions, like it settles down for a sec for some genuine emotion that I think is, it feels very, very true. I was just overwhelmed in the best possible ways. Like it was like firecrackers going off in my head over and over again, you know, like with every new texture and animation style. And I was like, oh, this is amazing. And then this is amazing. And the next thing's amazing. And there's such care with like the backgrounds. There's such care with like the smallest details, with the transitions, like who he is on a subway as Miles will then like really effortlessly like wipe to like who he is as, you know, Spider-Man. And they do that over and over again in a way that feels so fluid and so alive. I was just really impressed. The voice cast is great again because Oscar Isaac's in it, Issa Rae is in it. And then, of course, you have like Brian Tyree Henry coming back. Yep. A lot of people there are things I don't want to say. I will just say that I was very impressed with this film's ability to be completely crammed with Easter eggs, right? Like the tiniest little things in the margins, and you cannot possibly catch it all the first time through. You can't catch it all the second time through, I don't think. But the way that they do that, they give the fans what they want while also exploring the nature of fandom, while also exploring the nature of canon and like why people feel like their superheroes have to go through a prescribed series of steps in order for things to be true or authentic. Like, I love the way they poke holes in that idea while also giving the people what they want. Like, they thread that needle like expertly.
Yeah, no, it is this great sort of meta commentary kind of running through the whole piece. And it the movie really like calls up the experience of comics reading, not just in the way that like occasionally sound effects will be visible on the screen, or they'll have a little asterisk where they explain somebody will say something and they'll explain it to you in the corner, you know. But also what it reminded me of was, if you're a comic book collector and you grab a bunch of comics featuring the same character that have been published over the course of decades, and you just throw them down on the floor and you start reading them, and maybe not even reading them in order, like, you will see so many different iterations of Spider-Man, so many different ways to tell not just Peter Parker's story, but all the sort of different offshoots and stuff. But at the end of the experience, you still feel like there are certain truths to that character that carry throughout. And that was a feeling that I really got from this movie, in all the different ways they sort of spin Spider-Man. There is still sort of this essence of what Spider-Man is. And at the same time, as you point out, this notion that like, we're forcing Spider-Man to constantly go through the same hoop over and over again. And what happens if we don't?
Yeah. We should mention who the directors are: Joaquin Dos Santos, Kent Powers, and Justin K. Thompson. You mentioned Lord and Miller. They are among the writers here. And it does have their vibe of just being totally irrelevant. And just like the zippiness of the banter is so them. But then when it quiets down, like, there's this incredibly beautiful sequence where Miles and Gwen are sitting upside down on the Williamsburg Bank Tower and how like everything's inverted, and it's almost like time stops for them in that moment, and they're able to, you know, express what they're feeling. And it's the same good job of like, they're teenagers, you know, and like, what do teenagers want and what matters to them? They want to be taken seriously. And so I think it is grounded in emotional realism while also being constantly and repeatedly transporting into just these wild worlds.
Yeah. I was not expecting to think about Wings of Desire while watching Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, but yeah, here we are.
That is a really good analogy. Yeah. I've seen the complaint that it's hard to follow, that like the muchness of it is so overwhelming that it borders on the incoherent. And I found that kind of exciting. Like I'm having to catch up with it constantly. And like, okay, what was that? Like that was, it's like, it's you got to pay attention because
yeah, I mean,
there's
sure.
a lot going on.
Are there things in the frame that I did not catch the first time? Absolutely.
Of course.
But is there a linear plot that I could follow? Totally. You know,
and in the action sequences, you can also follow all of that too.
Absolutely.
Like, where I mean, they are zipping from one place to the next. And yes. those are all thrilling.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, they're pushing it to the limit. Like Dave and I recently watched Ziga Vertov's Man with a Movie Camera because we neither of us had ever seen it. And it was in the top 10 of the Sight and Sound thing. And when that movie came out, reviews were like, you know, the eye can only take in so much at some at certain speeds, you know, and he was really testing that. And this movie, I think, really tests that too. But I felt like I got what I needed to get to sort of follow the story of what's going on. And, you know, let's face it, each subsequent generation is always speeding that clock up. You know, whether you grew up on Sesame Street or you grew up on MTV or you grew up on video games, like our human brains are constantly taking in all this stuff at a much faster clip. And this is just where we are now.
Yeah. Well, I kind of loved it. So what's your number?
I'd say it's an 8.9.
Ooh, I'm saying 9.8.
Woo!
I really, really loved it. Like the fact that it is better than the original to me is just mind boggling.
Yeah. No, I think the first one, they really kind of realized, oh, we can do this and we can play around with this. Let's play around with it more, you know? So yeah, it's exciting to watch.
Have fun. Spider-Verse is in theaters.
From writer-director Celine Song, it premiered at Sundance this year, is now making its way into U.S. theaters. Past Lives.
Amazing that this is her directorial debut, her feature directorial debut.
Because so assured.
Assured is a totally great critic word, but that is precisely the word to use here because it's just got like this quiet confidence about it that I love so much. If you've not subscribed yet, we'd love to have you. Yes, we're in the Spider-Verse. We're deep in the thick of the Spider-Verse, but we also will always find time for a really important indie film like this. And so please come hang out with us. We'd love to see you subscribe this little button. You could join us if you'd like to. We'd love to have you. So Greta Lee and Teo Yu co-star as friends from childhood when they both were living in Seoul. We see them as children when they are both 12 years old and she and her family are on the verge of moving to Canada. And it's how they have like the sweetest and briefest little glimmer of a first romance with each other, but then she has to leave. And then it cuts ahead to when they're 24. 12 years later, they're both 24. She is now living in New York and she is an aspiring playwright. He is still in South Korea. They reconnect over Facebook and it's like no time has ever passed. And they have sort of a giddy sort of sweet reconnection with each other. Like that deep sense of like, I know who you are no matter what. Cut again later
the
on.
The magic of Skype.
Right, the magic of Skype. Early Skype. Boop, boop, boop. Boop, right, it was a different time. Boop, boop. So we see him at 12. We see him again at 24. Then we see him again at 36. And she is now married to John Magaro, who is also a writer. She is a more established playwright at this point, and he is still living in Korea. Her name is Nora. He is Haesung. And it's how they reconnect once again. And the whole way through is infused with this like gauzy, wispy melancholy of like, what if? And we have seen this kind of story before, you know, a sliding doors kind of story where like, what if I had stayed? What if he had come along?
Taken.
Right. What if, is it possible to have more than one soulmate, more than one true love, you know, and throughout is infused with this Korean sense of it's inyeon is the phrase. And it's like past lives. Like we have all met each other in past lives and maybe we'll reconnect down the road in another one. It's this really achingly melancholy, romantic notion. And the performances are just perfect from all three. Greta Lee, who if you watched The Morning Show with us, she is Stella with her severe bob on The Morning Show. And she conveys so much so subtly here, just with her eyes, just with her body language. You see how different she is with Haesung and then with her husband, the different kind of emotional intimacy with each of them, which feels distinct and true. I love John Magaro in this because third wheel, it's not at all the kind of character you would expect him to be. Like the maturity of it and the wisdom of it is totally heartbreaking. Right.
His understanding of the role that he is playing here, like the character's understanding of it.
Yes.
He even says at one point, like, if this were a story, I'd be the white devil bad guy,
yeah.
you know, who's getting in the way of you and your true love. But it's all more complicated than that.
Yeah. And I love the way it's edited because what she will do with it, these quick little snippets, these quick little like brief trips back in time or forward in time will just... It's breathtaking. It's like it gives everything a whole new meaning, more emotional resonance. It's just a lovely film. And a lot of it is just like people talking over Skype or like people just walking and talking through a park. But there's never a false note in the performances, in the meaning behind their words. There's great poetry to some of their dialogue, but not in a way that sounds like showy or forced or false.
Sure.
So I kind of loved it.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's one of those movies where it's the power is in the ellipticalness of it all and what isn't being said and then the silences that transpire between lines of dialogue. I mean, you could see this at some point in time as having been like a Jane Austen sort of thing, you know, where people sort of find each other again and begin a correspondence. But this is very much tied into like social media and contemporary technology. But it is ultimately about those same kind of very human emotions that are going on. And, you know, there are no villains here. You know, this is just about the way that life works out and the opportunities that you get and the people that you meet. And, you know, I always think about like, it's a dumb movie, but St. Elmo's Fire has that line.
It's a dumb movie? Come on.
It is a dumb movie. Let's be real.
It's fun, but
it's yeah. But like Ally Sheedy has this line about how like, you know what? If we hadn't all been in the same freshman dorm, we would have become friends with other people. Yeah. Like, you know, so much of life is just about like where circumstances place you and who you know. And so here you have somebody who is like separated from somebody at the age of 12 that she had this connection with who by rights she would never run into again. But because of the way the world is set up and the way that we can communicate with each other, like she gets to. And so then she has to sort of balance that with the new life that she's made for herself and the new relationships that she's made in that life. And so, yeah, I just, this is all, it's so delicate and it all feels so lived in. And there's just not a fake moment here. You're right. All three performances are extraordinary. And the way that that Celine Song just will weave the past and the present and show us something and then show us something from the past that illuminates what we just saw or underscores what's really going on in that moment. It's just like,
there's one cut with like them on the stairs that I went, it's so lovely. Yeah. And then the ending is perfect. Like they completely stick the landing with this.
Absolutely.
And you're holding your breath like, oh my God, what's going to happen in this moment? And the fact that it's like all one long take, I think is really smart to let us sort of linger with them in just like it's levitating in time, that moment. And I feel like we're right there with them in the intimacy of it. And it's kind of perfect. Yeah. So I kind of loved it. I'm going to say a 10.
Woo. I'm a 9.4, but I'm not mad at your 10 at all.
Be mad at my 10.
No, it's totally earned.
Yes, it has gravitas and it is earned. Yeah, so it's kind of a great week at the movies between Spider-Verse and Past Lives, which could not be more different from each other. It's like a really big, great week at the movies for whatever you're looking for.
Yeah, the Past Lives is opening today, June 2nd in New York and LA, but it is going to be going wider, I think, on the 16th. And I'm so glad that this is a movie that A24 picked up because they know how to get it out there. And I hope they do.
For sure. We can find a link to like where it's playing and when, and we'll put that down below so you can take a look for yourself. But it is definitely one that if it's anywhere near you, you're going to want to seek out in a theater.
For sure. Well, we thank you again for joining us. Like we mentioned, a lot of fun stuff happening at Patreon, particularly that Ted Lasso finale, but also keeping up with The Great on Hulu. And in the coming weeks, we've got season 2 of The Bear. We've got Secret Invasion over at Disney Plus. A lot of fun stuff that we'll be talking about. And of course, I'm putting up a poll soon for our June off the menu, where our members get to pick the movie that we review for the month. It's an older film that we haven't covered on the show before. So just there's just no reason for you not to be at patreon.com/linoleumknife supporting our show.
/ BFest all day.
Oh my God. I keep doing that. I'm so sorry. I have too many Patreons.
You have
in this
too
world.
Many things.
Patreon.com/BFest all day. We're also at BFest all day on all the socials. Have a great weekend, everybody. Happy Pride Month. Take care of yourselves and each other. We'll see you next time. Bye.
See you soon. Bye.